also in Exodus, we read about where things started in terms of here on the earth. I mentioned Satan in his temper tantrum. He basically was sent to the earth in the middle of his temper tantrum. And God established here in the midst of that the Garden of Eden. And God knew that if he had put any one of us in the garden with both trees, what we would do. Adam and Eve ate of the one tree they were not supposed to eat of, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So notice something for a second. It's all going to end with the knowledge of the glory of God filling the earth. And it started, time started, with us being presented the option of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. What did we lose access to when we ate of that fruit? We lost access to the tree of life. But like everything that is connected to our God and to his kingdom, it only always ever increases. In the end, what does God call us? What does he say about when we're with him for all of eternity? That we will be called oaks of righteousness. So the very tree we lost access to in the garden now grows in us. The river of life that flowed in the garden. This ends with us having that same river of life springing up from within each one of us. What he does only gets better. So what was lost in the garden, this is all rigged. The victory in this war is already sure. So although it's a war, it's a battle you've been born into, you can be sure of the victory. Then it becomes an adventure. It becomes a matter of how much ground can I take in my little lifetime. I know I'm kind of all over the place. It's just my way of processing. But I'm going to take you back to the Garden of Eden, this tree of the knowledge of good and evil. What happened in that moment, supernaturally, because it was a supernatural tree, it caused Adam and Eve, and therefore we all came from Adam and Eve, our physical brains to process differently from that moment forward. Prior to that moment, they looked at something or someone, and God especially, and knew his true intentions. His reputation was correct in their hearts. Another aspect of the glory of God, it's your reputation, okay? God's reputation, the truth about who he is and how he is, will fill the earth. They ate of that tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and it turned on an ability in their brain to look at something or someone, and most importantly, to look at God and question, is he good or is he evil? Is he for me or is he against me? And that's where that question comes from in all of our hearts. Do I really matter? He's the only one that can answer that. Because if he's good, then I matter. If he's not good, then I'm just an accident, a coincidence, a necklace full of pearls that are falling to the floor, chaos and tragedy after tragedy. But we're not that. And if things with God are only good and only get better, then what was he thinking in putting the tree in the garden? Well, the obvious thing, like we said, and you've thought of this probably yourself too, is that we needed the option of choice. If he was going to get the desire of his heart, intimacy with each one of us, and intimacy with us collectively as humanity, then we had to choose. Because intimacy that's just from one side is abuse. And the knowledge of one person that's not mutual from the other person is perverted. But this is real love. This is real intimacy that's going to last for all of eternity. And because of that, he's rigged this thing, you guys. When this all ends, all right, I got to read you one other quick thing that's going to help me make my point. Are you with me? Okay. All right, this is another journal entry that I put into this new book that I wrote. It's called Court Adjourned. I want you to imagine God. If you've seen The Shack, whether you like the movie or not, that's not what we're discussing right now. You imagine God as the defendant in a trial. Now, that's the person that you're trying to decide if they're guilty or not guilty, right? That's the defendant. Is that correct? Okay. God is the defendant, and he is on trial. Court adjourned. God on trial every day. Every motive screened and filtered in the courtroom of life. My life, your life, every heart has a judge, a jury, and a special chair for this defendant. An endless string of accusations and questioning. And there, the creator of all things, and the one who holds me together, sits with perfect patience and profound humility, with affectionate, smiling eyes, happy to have my attention nonetheless, listening and gently responding as every flower petal falls to the floor. Like a child's game, we pick the petals from a daisy. He loves me. He loves me not. He loves me. He loves me not. I can't believe after all these generations we still do this to him. I still do this to him. Who can explain him? Who can figure any of it out? Can he really be diminished to my perceptions of him? To yours? To what we've been through or what we will go through, to what we have or to what we don't have? Can he be whittled down into our fleeting thoughts or momentary feelings? Only if he wants to. But who really knows what he wants? I know I don't know, and that feels good today. Today, my heart rests in knowing a God who will take an eternity to know. A God who wants to be known in his fullness outside the courtroom. And then I ended the journal entry with, God, I'm so sorry. I'm really sorry I've chosen the courtroom once again. Let's go somewhere else today, anywhere but there. So the courtroom exists in our hearts because we ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And when we ate of that tree, we began to filter the reputation or our perspective of who God is or isn't through our circumstances. Boy, the enemy has leveraged that one, hasn't he? Now, for just a moment, I want to help you make a connection between your individual battle and the bigger battle or the greater narrative that Johnny spoke into last night. In the same way that we go through things, circumstances, even when you're like really mature and you've known God for a long time, you get this great parking spot in front of Starbucks or whatever your coffee places are here. Tim Hortons, you got that great parking space. you feel just a little more loved and seen by God, right? We do this to him. He loves me, he loves me not. We whittle him down to our circumstances. When the truth is, he's still here, the perfect father with the perfect love, with the perfect intentions towards us, who's much bigger than any circumstance, but who didn't show up in the circumstance the way that we thought that he should have. And as a generation, it's kind of frustrating because we know more than any other previous generation how powerful he is. And we're contending like crazy for the truth of his power and his healing power and his tangible presence and the kind of power that clears hospitals, right? So we find ourselves in this place of contending for that while contending still for the basics of, is he really good? Can he really be trusted? Where was I? So, society, yes, thank you, babe. In the same way, okay, we're going to go back to this original point that I was making when I started. I'm sitting on the front row, I'm hearing Johnny preach this big picture message 10 years ago. God spoke to me and he said, I want you to know that the same way that I am healing your individual heart from the lies you've believed about yourself and about me, I am healing the collective hearts of cities and nations through every area of culture. And he said, you know, and this was a time where I was beginning to get a lot of healing and I was embracing the grief that I had stuffed for so long. And I found this place of, I don't know, Pastor Joel and I were speaking about this yesterday. At our table, we were talking about some of what, y'all got to go to his pain thing. I forget what you're calling it, the breakout session on pain. Whew. There's something that happens when you allow yourself to go back to that original wounding and that original place of pain and you let that out. Because to the same degree that you need comfort, you experience the comforter. Every area of our weakness is a full-blown opportunity to encounter an aspect, a place in his heart that we could have never experienced. Every true battlefront is about the knowledge of God. If in the end this all ends with the knowledge of God filling the earth, how much more so our own hearts? So your individual battle, it daily is about opportunities to know and experience and encounter who God is for you. And what you have, you can give away. What he does for one, he can do for masses. And he does both simultaneously, like only the Creator can. Also, this big picture perspective, I realized that in every area of culture, we have set systems into place. We talk thoroughly about this in the book Rainbow God, but we have set systems into place. When I say we, I mean humanity. Okay, so every nation has these seven primary areas of culture: economy, family, arts and entertainment, government, etc. And it all looks and feels different, and it's supposed to in each nation. We have our own flavor. I'll just use one for an example. So government. In the same way that when I experience a lie as an individual, I begin to develop a belief system around that lie. And what you believe, you begin to act out of. You make decisions and choices. Your behavior begins to reflect what you believe. Okay, so broken people, just like you and me, set all of these areas of culture into motion through specific systems that we put into place. actually, instead of government, I'll just do economy. For example, if I am in a position in the economy of a particular nation and I have great influence and I put certain systems in place, they're going to reflect ultimately what I personally believe about economy. And I've developed my personal beliefs about economy, whether I realize it or not, on a subconscious level, based on what I believe about who God is or isn't as my provider. And if I believe that he's less than the provider that he is, then I'm going to set systems into place in my nation's economy that are rooted in not in love and the love of a perfect father who provides for his kids, but I'm going to root those systems in greed. Every man for himself. And the harder you work, the harder you got to work, because whatever you do to make this happen, you got to do to sustain it. And you better never count on God. Like, this is God's left the earth to us. We're the ones that's supposed to figure it all out. And when you make choices to put belief systems and therefore practical systems into place and you act on those, then you reap the consequences of those lies. And you begin to perpetuate the belief in those lies. So, for example, if an economy is rooted in greed and I am being provided for because I was greedy, then I'm perpetuating that lie, ultimately, about the knowledge of God in my nation. You see it in your own seven mountains of your own soul, and it plays out in the same way in the seven areas of culture in every nation. Do you see this, the upscaled version of your personal battle and how it connects to the bigger picture battle? I hope this is registering. I'm something that's very hard to communicate because it is so encompassing. So what is the war over? The war is over the knowledge of God and intimacy with him. It's about an enemy who doesn't want God to have the very desire of his heart. The knowledge of God filling your heart. You thinking less of God than he really is because of how you experience circumstances. And the war is also over the knowledge of God filling the earth. And not giving all the sons and daughters, especially the ones outside of the four walls of the church, not giving them access to the truth of who he really is. Another quick word picture. This is another quote by Johnny. I love this one. Your destiny is an obstacle course designed by God to maximize your capacity to love. Your destiny is an obstacle course designed by God to maximize your capacity to love. So, again, a word picture. You know, my nephew got me playing this game with him one day on the Wii. So I just hate games. They stress me out. And so, you know, I'm trying to do this relational thing with my nephew, and he's got me on this obstacle course, and you stand in front of the TV and somehow it reads your body language. And so I'm running on this obstacle course and I keep falling into this same like pit while I'm running on it. And I always think of that when I think of this quote. And I got so excited when my nephew finally realized that I was not very good at this, and he showed me the pause button. It's like, this is magical. So I'd press the pause button, you know, I'd take a couple steps and pause it, and then just try to kind of survey and take things in. Side note, I think of the pause button on this obstacle course of life is worship, right? We can hit the pause button any place, any time, and just enter back into that place of acknowledging his presence that's always with us, and putting ourselves consciously back under the gaze that is always on us. So we push the pause button. Another thing about this obstacle course is it is an obstacle course. And we can be running along and think we're on, you know, the 100-yard dash, and then we get kind of irritated because these hurdles keep being put in front of us. You know, I could actually win this thing if the hurdles weren't there. And the Lord is saying, no, that's the whole point. That's the whole point. You ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You got a propensity to look at me through your circumstances. And it's okay, because every time that you come over that hurdle, that circumstance, and you come out on the other side believing even a glimpse of the truth of who I am, my true nature, my true character, the knowledge of the glory of just how good I am despite what's right in front of you. You are encountering love. You are growing in the knowledge of who I am. And the way he has this rigged also is because we are already eternal beings. You are an eternal being. And what you do from this non-eternal body, you're going to get the new body there, right? But this particular body is going to fail and go away. But you have the ability to converge these two realms, the natural and the spiritual realm, together. So every one of you are already an expert on God. Every one of you is already impacting the spirit realm around you in a way that is creating a tsunami of the knowledge of the glory of God every time you choose to believe that he's good and he's only good, that he heals when you didn't see him heal, that he's all of these things, that he is the creator. When you look at arts and entertainment, you don't turn your back on it. And you say, he wants to show up there because that's who he is. And you say, he's king, therefore I'm not going to give up on government. I don't care what it looks like in any given term or election. It's minimal. It doesn't matter. Because he is king and his government is coming to earth. Of the increase of his government, there is no end. Of his, you get it. I'm trying to make this connection for you. Another quick thing you've got to know. The enemy is the enemy. People are never the enemy. We've got to keep from running to false battlefronts. The enemy gets behind the people that are our brothers and sisters and don't yet know that they are. And he gets behind them and he says, over here, drop a bomb right here. We talk about the knowledge of God. The most simple way to explain who this God is he's love. Love isn't an idea. It's not a concept. Love is a person. And if we don't give them the opportunity to encounter love, nothing else matters. And if we think that this God, this perfect Father of ours, that his one desire of us is to get us to behave, then who are we going to show them that he is? The God who's just trying to get them to behave. And if we think that he's looking for an opportunity to be angry with us rather than an opportunity to show us compassion and mercy and kindness and love because we've misread the circumstances as his anger, what will we give to them? An angry God who's just trying to get them to behave. So what have we done? We have brought subconsciously this perspective to those who don't yet know him. We've made them think and feel like, you know, I'm not trying to put a trip on you. This is something that I've just recently been awakening to myself. But we've put this trip on them that says, if you don't hurry up and get this right, God is going to come and judge my nation. And then I'm going to be in trouble with the God that I love. and I can't handle that, so get your act together. And would you like to be saved? And know this Jesus? There is a Jesus that you have to know. But why will they want to hear that from me if they don't first know that I know how loved I am? And the love that has been lavished on me and is continually lavished on me, despite what my circumstances tempt me to believe, I have an overflow of this love, because this love is a river of God. And it is coming out from under his throne room. And it is a force that cannot be stopped. And I'm going to give the God that I know the desire of his heart. There's nothing more tragic than love that is poured out that is not received. Can you think of a more sad movie than to watch somebody just pining away in love with someone, and then it never ends with them getting to love the person they've been in love with through the whole movie, right? That we don't make movies like that. And that's not how this movie is ending. This love, this person of love, will hit its mark in every heart, because it has to. It is the very nature of who he is and the force that he is, the force that he loves with. It has to hit its mark. And if I can do nothing else in my lifetime, this is it, y'all. This is your freedom right here. If I can do nothing else in my lifetime but radically love the way he has radically loved me, with no fear of looking like I'm condoning their sin, he does not put that trip on you. You don't have to be afraid to come up close, right alongside someone who is the most depraved, broken, messed up person, who is speaking the most deception about God or about Christianity or about how things should be done in any area of culture. We can come right up alongside them with one agenda. And it is the one agenda that our God has: love. And when they feel and experience the real him, who is love, surely, surely, it is impossible to reject that love. So as we are allowing the Holy Spirit to reorient us right now, what the battle is about, it's not over a God and an enemy that's the same size. It's not about the hot topics going on in our society any given day. It's not even about Christianity being advanced in our time or in the earth. It's about the love of God hitting its mark in every heart. It's about the correct reputation of God filling the earth. And it starts every day with you allowing the correct reputation of God to settle in powerfully and stably in your own heart. You need to know that you're doing well. And as you hear over the next 2 days more of this big picture that Johnny's going to be giving you, and looking for your role in it and your place in it, you've already been on the front lines. You're already there. You're simply waking up to what's actually been happening, the battle that you're actually already winning. I'm going to leave you with this one last statement. This is a statement that I have used for years now, that just every day grounds my heart back to what matters the most. The kingdom is meant to be simple and stay simple. It doesn't mean we can't get some really profound revelations in the midst. But at its core, the kingdom is supposed to remain simple. Therefore, we get to remain simple. When the enemy tries to make it complicated, I bring it back to this one statement. It is this. Why am I here? Now, what's the point of today? I live to know the real him, to make the real him known, to learn how to be loved, and to learn to love. You cannot fail. Any moment, any day, any season that you're going through, you cannot lose this battle when you are learning how to be loved and out of the overflow of that love, pouring it out on others. And you cannot fail if every day you see as an opportunity, no matter what is in front of you, to know him. Not who someone else told you that he was, but know him for yourself. Know him in the ways that you need to know him today, in whatever circumstance you're in. And as soon as you get it, just give it away. Wherever your voice can be heard, in all the ways that your voice can be heard, whether it's through a smile in the grocery store, or the way you lay your life down for your friends, your family, the way you serve in the four walls of the church, or the way that you do business, 9 to 5, wherever you are and whatever you're doing. People may not remember what you say, but they'll remember how you made them feel. And their hearts are pre-wired by the Creator himself to know that when they experience something or someone in a way that makes them feel like they matter, and it answers that question of their heart, yeah, I do matter. I just experienced the way that car deal went down, like I mattered. I just experienced that doctor's appointment, like I really mattered. The way that waitress served me, the way that government official shifted and changed that law made me feel like I matter. This is the kingdom of God. The way he does things best, coming through his sons and daughters into every area of culture. Amen.